hard because it's a little nuanced. It's not just like, okay, so this is what you're doing. You're buying a sticker. You put an animal in your book. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. There's not, mm-hmm. it's not like a formula like that.
You have to make people care about those things.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then they want all the raccoon stickers and they want to send you those things, but you can't just, you know, you can't manufacture it. There's a lot more, I think, that goes into it. That's harder work. Right. Just slapping a sticker on something or slapping a dog on the cover of a book.
Welcome to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast, where we focus on how authors found success, looking at strategies that have taken them to the top of the bestseller charts, as well as what they've learned from their mistakes. Because being an indie author is more than knowing the latest marketing trend. It's about being innovative and creative and learning from your mistakes.
Welcome to Wish I'd Known Then podcast. I'm Sarah Rosette.
And I'm Jamie Albright. And this week on the show, we have
Emma St. Clair.
Emma St. Clair, and it's so good. Emma St. Clair is the pen name for Kirsten Oliphant, who we've had on the podcast before back in May of 2020.
Actually, it was March of 2020. I wrote it down wrong, and we talk about it being in May, but it was actually in March.
It was in March, because it was right before the pandemic. Right before we got locked down and everything. Yeah,
so needless to say, quite a few things have changed in the world in general, and for Kiki, who sometimes is she's known, and Emma St. Clair. She's doing a rom-com now and just doing so well with it. We really...
Sweet rom-com, closed-door rom-com. Yeah. And it has leveled her up multiple levels. She was doing really well before when we talked to her in 2020, and now it's just a whole different whole different level of success. And
And so, we talk about how that success has brought pressure and how she deals with that, and you know, and also we talked to her about, you know, writing rom-com and humor, and then also she has some great ideas on email building your email list. She's doing a lot of fun things like a reader retreat.
Lots of good stuff. You guys are going to love this interview. So what's been going on with you?
I'm still writing. That's what I'm doing most of my time. We were just saying last time when we recorded the intro that our intros are kind of boring. We're writing, researching, writing. And, you know, writing is not, you don't wear a GoPro. Because it's just so boring.
And I don't have any family tragedies to fill everyone in on. Thank goodness. They're pretty boring.
It's pretty tame right now. And I don't really have any tips or anything. I haven't found anything interesting or exciting lately. So, hey, if you want to talk about K-dramas, I got stuff.
Maybe we should do a podcast on K-dramas.
We so should. I have new insights on a love triangle. I have new insights on all kinds of stuff.
Great.
What about you? What's going on?
Not much. I mean, same thing. I'm writing, which is big. I mean, that's big for me. I wrote 2,000 words day before yesterday. And that's the most words I've written in probably 3 years or 2.5 years, which is not good. I mean, it does say it's something. Last week I was writing just like 1,000 words a day. I was like, I'm just going to sit down and write. But when I would get to about 1,000 words, I could tell my brain was done. And so on Monday, I was writing and I got to 1,000 words and I was like, I feel like I have some more things to say. And so I could keep going. And I don't know, I guess I got to about 1,300 words or something, 1,400, and got hungry. And so I left Starbucks and came home and then had some things to do around here. And so in the later afternoon, when my husband came home, I was finishing up and I went on to write a little over 2,000, actually, but not not a whole lot. And it was great. It was great. But then yesterday I had to... I worked on the story, but it wasn't actually writing words. I had to think about kind of what comes next. I don't, you know, because I don't really plot. And, whatever it is. I don't know what I'm writing, y'all. I have no idea.
But you're writing, and that's the main thing. That's good. And you're enjoying it, right? You're having a good time.
I am having fun.
Yeah.
I am.
Yeah. So I've been doing
giggling to myself, which is good.
That's awesome. I think we've got a little bit of a delay or something. But
yeah, we had a little. Yeah.
So I've been like, I'll do my words. And then today I realized, oh, this is not, I didn't emphasize that enough, this certain aspect. So I had to go back like 3 chapters and I just went ahead and did it and fixed it. But, you know, so it's like moving forward and moving back. But
yeah,
that's okay because I know it's easier for me to fix some of those things as I go. So I'll let myself do that. But I can't go back and start at chapter one and redo everything.
No. Yeah, that's yesterday. I realized there's some things I need to. I just need to make it funnier. You know, it just needs to be funnier. Well, I don't know about funnier, but more madcap, I think. I'd like it to be more madcap. And I was thinking, okay, I'll just start I'll just go back to the beginning and do 6 chapters or whatever. And then I was late last night, I was like, no. Keep going. I know what I need to do. I can start from here. And, you know, I got to revise it anyway. So I can do all that. But I mean, it feels good. Feels good to write. But, it's not without doubts. Let me just tell you, it's not like I've woken up a new person. I have not. Wow. I still have all the neuroses that I had, you know, pre-disaster.
Well, that's like typical for a writer.
Plus some.
totally normal.
Anyway, yeah.
All right.
So that's
we should
going.
Say quickly that we don't have any new supporters this week, but thanks to everyone who has been supporting the podcast.
Yes, thank you.
We really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And if you've gotten value from the podcast and want to help us out, you can go to wishidknownforwriters.com/support and support us there.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And if you need any branding help or just book help in general, or, you know, book business help, I'm happy to help you. You can go to my website under Author Services and contact me there and get more information. I did get an email from somebody today that had a new release, but she had some other books. And so we had sort of strategized her launch and she's getting page reads, and every day the page reads go up. And so it was really cool. It was cool because she's really never had, I think this was the 4th book she's released, and she's just never really had any kind of consistent growth of page reads. And she, since the book came out last month, it just, you know, they're reading through the series basically, is what she's saying. So,
all right.
It's really cool. So,
all right. Well, that is fantastic.
Love to help. So,
okay, so we should get on with this interview.
Yep.
All right, here's Emma. Well, today we are really excited to have Emma St. Clair with us. Hi, Emma, how are you?
I'm good. How are y'all doing?
We are fantastic. We're so glad you're here. Thanks for being here.
Yes. So we've actually had Emma on previously. She was on with her, this is Emma St. Clair's a pen name, and you were on earlier episode 9. About writing clean romance, sustainability, and pantsing books with Kirsten Oliphant. So this is fun to have you back and kind of catch up and see what's changed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, a lot. I was listening to that episode. I think it was like right before COVID, like the week or something before when we recorded it. So yeah, a lot has changed.
Like the world.
The world is different now. Yes.
Yeah. The world in general. Yeah.
Well, let me read your bio and then we'll get into our questions. Emma St. Clair is a USA Today bestselling author who loves sassy heroines, witty banter, and love stories with heart and humor. Her books have sizzling chemistry while keeping the bedroom door closed. She has an MFA in fiction and lives in Katy, Texas with her husband, 5 children, and a Great Dane. And her favorite place to write is tapping on her phone while on the elliptical machine. That's ambitious.
Yeah.
Still true. Although I got a treadmill desk now, so we're using
that. That's good. Good, nice. Good. I'm feared for your safety.
No,
on the elliptical.
No, No, I used to have that. I think in my one of my bios, I put like, no Emmas have been hurt in the process.
That's good.
Yeah, I'm so used to using the machine. Like, I don't know what it does for my actual fitness, but like, I don't think I could fall off the thing at this point. So,
no, that's good. That's good. Well, give us a quick update on what's happened since you were last on the podcast in May of 2020.
So much. Yeah, I mean, I really do. I think I was looking when we when it was published was right after COVID had happened. I think the week we recorded it was maybe right before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I was at my daughter's when we published it and I didn't see them for months after it happened. So, yeah.
Oh, the world's changed. A lot has changed. So for me, I sort of veered into, away from just Sweet Romance and specifically and fully into romantic comedy, which was something I'd been planning. Like at the point we talked, I had been researching. I had this big document, which I like to look at now, that was like looking at comparable authors. And there weren't very many in like the sweet romance space. There were some.
Right.
But they were kind of writing a little bit different than what I wanted to write. And I wasn't sure, like I was thinking about using another pen name, like I'll be Kirsten and also Emma and also this other name. You know, just trying to debate, because I think the sweet romance, there are differences. Like even, I mean, it's amazing how many like the little differences and nuances can be between something like sweet romance and sweet romantic comedy. Like there just is a difference. And so I wasn't sure if my humor would be too edgy, because I didn't want like cheesy Hallmark humor. I wanted like to walk up to the edge, but not go over the edge, if that's even possible. Which I think, I mean, Jamie, you know this, you write humor, and I think humor, you have to take a risk.
Yeah.
And you do have to push. And I just wasn't sure. Anyway, so I'd been researching at that point, and in the fall of 2020, I wrote a book that just was so miserable to write. And I was like, it was a women's fiction. It was heavy. And I just felt heavy. And I had two rom-coms started, but I was waiting till I had like other series finished and like the right break in my time. And I was like, no, I need something fun. And so I dove into one of those already started manuscripts for Falling for a Best Friend's Twin, and finished the thing in like 2 weeks. And then I was like, do I publish this now? Like I wasn't planning to publish it till the spring. And I wanted to like do that whole series right in a row, because I already had it kind of, I don't plot really still, but I had like a sketched idea of like these five friends and their love stories. And I just hit publish without really warning people. I did, you know, I had my same ARC team read it, and I had one beloved, sweet, sweet ARC reader write me and tell me she hated it.
Oh, no.
And I really, like, I absolutely was like, do I do this? And I had a few other authors who had read it, and they're like, no, you have to. And really, that was life-changing, because it honestly did take me kind of, you know, you say overnight success, like, right, like 3 years in, and it was a couple years in to, I mean, leveling up beyond what I even had made as a goal for myself. And so, yeah, that's been the biggest change, is just completely shifting out of the straight sweet romance. And I had been writing some young adult, like urban fantasy kind of stuff. And so I moved out of that too, and just focused on the rom-com. And so it's been great. I mean, yeah, just totally different kind of realm of success. Like I was doing fine, you know, making kind of like okay money, but now, and my husband hadn't been working, so like the money was okay, but it was like very important money. But then it sort of became like the full-time career I'd really hoped that it would be. And so
it really took you to the next level. I mean,
yes, like more levels up than I was like anticipating. And I think it just, there were a lot of reasons for it, I think, but, and it's so nice because this is really way more me than sweet romance. Like, I feel like I had to hold back a little bit because there are differences. Again, there's some nuances with the sweet romance versus what I'm writing now, which I really would call, I usually call it closed door rom-com. Although, man, I'm so tired of terms, y'all. I don't know if this is the same. I think, Jamie, you probably deal with this, the sweet and the spice, or the, not sweet, but the spicy versus steamy, and the like expectations for readers with all these terms. And I think my arena, it's like, is it clean? What does that mean? And that's offensive. So is it sweet? What does sweet mean?
Yeah.
I know. What is closed door? What's fade to black? All those, all those things. So that's my new concern.
Yeah, it's crazy. In fact, someone did a TikTok about how she's Catholic, but she reads smutty romance, which, you know, I do not like the word smutty, but my book was her gateway drug into smutty romance. And I'm like, oh, good. But she said that what she wanted to talk about were the morals of smutty romance. And my book was the one she used because it was also sweet.
Right.
And so it's really hard because my books are sweet.
Right.
But they are open door sex. So, you know, it's hard.
It is hard. And the terms, I think, change between, like, if you're talking about like what a traditional publisher uses and what indies use, and depending, like, I always laugh because I'm in all these big reader groups, right? And like somebody will come in and be like, I just read this Colleen Hoover book and now I love spicy romance. And everybody just laughs because that's not considered spicy. Like,
no, not at
all. Just because there's an open door and people are like, oh, child, you know, you don't know.
Yeah. Like,
what
my friend
about to enter into.
My old friends that aren't in the book world or don't really read a lot of romance, they're just scandalized by my book. I mean, they love me and they don't judge me for it, but they're like, oh my gosh, do you feel weird? And I'm like, y'all, listen, what I do is nothing compared to others, but I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it.
Yeah.
It's almost like we need multiple ways to write things. Like, you've got like the spicy, steamy, but then you've also got the tone of the book and the emotional depth of the book. There's all these different variables that it's really hard to convey. So what are your preferred, like, what would you want readers to call your books or think of the book as?
Yeah, I call them closed door. And that probably, like, to some people, they don't really even classify that, because some people, the reason I use that, okay, let me go back. I'll work backwards, right? Clean is very offensive to some people because they think it implies other books are dirty, which, you know, I get it, even though I feel like a lot of people use dirty in that space in a good way. And I like clean also, like if you're talking about a clean manuscript, that's one without errors. So clean books to me, they're without sex and without language, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't want to be offensive. And also, because my books do tiptoe up to the edge. And like sometimes people even say like these kisses were too much. And I'm like, I mean, it's just a kiss. This is what you're going to get, you know?
Yeah.
So, I feel like there's a little bit, like, they're a little bit edgier, but some people feel like closed door means you're going to walk up to the bedroom door and then close it, which to me, I'm like, well, that's fade to black, but there, again, the terms, right? So I put it in the term of closed door because I think there's a little bit more freedom, even though I don't use a ton of language in my books, like even to some of the readership. I had somebody actually write a review and I thought they were confused because they said my book had cussing, and I emailed her and I was like, hey, it doesn't really, what did you mean? And she said, well, dang. And I was like, oh, okay. I think I had a hell in there, you know? And I was like,
yeah.
So I feel like closed door kind of allows a little bit more freedom in that, in that realm. And also I do have a ton of steamy readers, and a lot of them will say this is like their palate cleanser between, you know, the haunting and hunting Adeline.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it's kind of just a little bit broader term, but everybody, again, there's just so many debates and I'm just tired of having and seeing about what means what, and this doesn't quite mean this, but this is the best, I think, that describes the books.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's good to know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what's the most important lesson you've learned recently?
Oh boy. I think it's funny because I think the same lesson I talked about learning in my last episode, I didn't learn. Which is, you know, if something's working, don't stray from that. And it's hard because, also since our last interview, I realized I'm not officially diagnosed, but through researching a character, realized I have ADHD. Surprise, I'm in my 40s. And now I'm like, oh, this explains so many things, including, I think, writing on the elliptical machine, you know, where I focus and how I focus, all these things kind of like, oh, I've been compensating for all these years for the fact that my brain doesn't work the way many people's do. And so, you know, it is really hard to balance like this, the many ideas. And what I want to do. So even though I'm writing still in romantic comedy, I have a couple open series, and that is difficult. Like, I have seen how, you know, doing, so example, I'll give a specific example. I had started a series that's kind of my main bread and butter series. It takes place in a fictional town called Sheet Cake, Texas. And so I started that series, wrote two books, And then I had this royal book that went crazy and had taken off. And I always meant to write more. And it kind of, it went viral on TikTok, like mini viral, but enough to make a bunch of money. And I was like, well, you know, I need to, I'll just write the second one of these. It'll be a little break. So every year I'll write one royal book. Meanwhile, I'm finishing this main series. Well, that book, for whatever reason, instead of taking 2 to 3 months, which was typical, took like 8 to write. And, you know, when you're used to releasing every 3-4 months, that gap is huge. And so, you know, I have seen, like, I went back, I had to give sales numbers to somebody and I was like, yep, that's what happens when you take a break in the middle of a series, which, you know, you have to balance so many things. For me, I have to balance, like, mentally, did I need a break from the series? I need to write something else. Maybe, you know, in fact, right now I'm taking a break. I'm writing some hockey books. And so I'm still making that choice to kind of veer off from the bread and butter. And I don't know when I'm going to get that finished, that series finished. And losing that momentum really did hurt. But, you know, at the same time, I don't regret the things I did. I did a multi-author series this fall. And that meant that I couldn't finish the Sheet Cake series this year, which I'd or last year, I guess, which I'd kind of planned to do. You know, and so I think that is the biggest lesson I've learned is you have to really weigh, okay, changing directions at all, veering off just a little can make a huge impact in the momentum. And so if I'm going to do that, I need to weigh out, like, what's the cost? Like, what's the mental cost for me? Because sometimes I do need a mental break. So, okay, but is that worth how much money you're going to lose over here? And that kind of thing. And so I think that's still the lesson for me is, consistency is key. And when something works, doing more of it. But if you're going to veer off, make sure there's a reason, like think about it, right? Like I'm writing these hockey books, you know, this kind of spinoff series from the fall series I did because hockey has been so hot that even in the suite area, like I have made more money on that book. It's, I think it's now my third bestseller and it came out in like the 1st of September.
Yeah.
So like that's 4 or 5 months or something. So obviously, for the money impact, like staying with hockey is smart. But at the same time, it's at the expense of like the consistency of my main bread and butter series. But at this point, the momentum was already lost. And so, you know, so counting that cost of what it, what, you know, what is good and bad about taking a break, but just knowing if you're something's working and you do take any kind of break from it, and whether that's time or doing another series, what the momentum loss can actually cost.
Right. Right. Okay. Very good. Very good. I was going to ask you about the hockey book. Actually, I had written it down because the last time, oh gosh, we haven't really seen each other. Oh no, we saw each other after that. But anyway, you were talking about the hockey book at Meet. Right. And I hadn't asked you about it. And so, yeah, so it's good to know it's doing well. And do you have other hockey books out?
Yeah. So the fall series I did, every time I've done a multi-author series, I've lost money. Okay. Wait, let me put that in perspective. I have not made as much money. So I didn't come out like in the red. It was just like a dip in income. Yeah. And so, the Jenny Proctor, who I often co-write with, and she and I do a lot together, she was in that multi-author series too. So I said, let's do hockey books. Cause you and I already work together. Right. So the series was just a small town. So I was like, let's make up a small town hockey team. Our books will be hockey. And I always love spinoffs. And, you know, I love found family and family and friendships. And so as I was writing my book, I was like, oh man, I love these guys on this team. Sure I'm going to probably want to write their books. We'll just see. But that book, my book in that series, I think partially because of hockey, but also partially because of the series was so successful. That book stayed in the top 100 for like 8 weeks.
Wow.
I was blown away by it. I've never had that happen. And so obviously that was like, okay, people want more of this. And so my co-author and I are doing like kind of a spinoff series. We did alternate covers for those books because they're still in the fall series, but now we made alternate paperback covers that will match the new hockey series. So we're not co-writing, but we're kind of alternating in that. And you know, that book is still making way more money than my other books. And so I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I don't like to make money or make decisions just based on money. But at the same time, if I like something also and it's making a bunch of money, then it's very easy.
You have to be practical. You got to be practical, right? And figure out, okay, this is worth the time and maybe this isn't. So when you say take a break, so you've got your main, your bread and butter series, you put that on hold. Did you write like one book and then go back to your bread and butter, or did you write several and then go back, or how did that work?
Well, I meant to do more. And then what I found is I'm just taking a lot longer to write books right now. I don't know if that's, I don't know why. I don't know if it's, there's so much more pressure I didn't realize would come with success. And so a lot of it's mental. Like, I just think mentally I'm pretty worn down.
Yeah.
Maybe a little burned out too, but just the pressure, I've just slowed down a lot. I also have a much bigger readership. And so I feel like where with the sweet romance, I just didn't have a huge readership. And if I threw out a book real quickly, I could be proud of it, but maybe it wasn't my very best. You know, like it was good enough is really what it was. It was good enough. Where now I feel like my readership has grown to the point where I want the quality to be better. And so I am taking a bit more time, but also it's just taken me more time to write. It's not like some people are like, oh, it takes, I don't believe taking longer means a better book. Mm-hmm. I do think there's a little bit more to my editing process now than there was, but also just mentally, it's just slower. So I meant to write, but now it's sort of like a, let's just see when we can get things done. I'm trying to like sort of take the deadlines off myself. This year, what I've decided is I'm going to stop doing pre-orders because of the mental strain and because sometimes stuff changes in your life that you don't
have no control over. Yeah.
I've been setting them out a year ahead and then publishing early, but sometimes like I'm coming up on a book at the end of spring and it's, you know, I think May. And I'm like, I don't know that I can get that one done because this last one took too long. And so I planned all these things, gauging that it used to take 2 to 3 months to write a book, and now it's taking longer. And so I have to mentally adjust, but also adjust sort of that idea of deadlines.
Right.
And then now I just signed a trad deal. So I have a trad book, which won't be out till 2025, but I have to write it out. Now I've got a whole lot of things that I need to be doing as I'm burned out a little bit.
We've had this conversation. I've had this conversation with lots of writers about, wow, I used to could write a book in 2, 3, 4 months, whatever, X number of months. And now it's taking much longer. And I think part of it is just the continual, like those of us who've been doing this for years and years, after a while, you just begin to slow down because things, you just can't keep going at the pace you're at. We were in the, we're so excited we can write books and publish them phase for a while there.
Absolutely.
I also think ideas, you know, I mean, like people like Nora Roberts and stuff, like the place where she gets all of her, the fact that ideas come to her, you know, and she's able to just put them out and write those books. That is shocking to me. Like writing comedy to me is harder, I think, for me, because, you know, you have to be funny. And sometimes it's hard to be funny. You know, either you've used up all your good ideas or your good jokes, or you just don't feel funny. So that's
hard. I think humor is a lot harder. That's another part. And yesterday I'm finishing up a book. I will finish it today. Today's the day it'll be done. But I realized the dark moment was way too dark. And I was like, I'm pretty sure this has to do with my mood today, which is like not great. And so today I like copied and pasted and moved all that out of the doc and into my planning doc and went back in. And I was like, oh, now everybody's happy. Better.
It's like the Barbie movie. I don't know if you saw the Barbie movie, but Barbie starts she's not all happy. She starts like contemplating life and the darkness of life. And she's like, what is wrong? Well, it's because, I won't give it away, but anyway, spoiler, but it's that kind of thing. It's like, what has happened to my perfect little world that I just created? So yeah, that's funny.
Yeah.
Well, would you say that's the biggest mindset change you've had, or is there something else that since you've leveled up so much and really seen this level of success, I mean, have you had a mindset switch?
I think so. I mean, I think a lot has changed in mindset. I've had to, the biggest surprise to me was the pressure. Like, I just remember when my first book came out and did better than any book had ever done for me. I would go every day and look at my income and look at my rank, and I was so excited. And then real quickly, that became the biggest stressor for me. Yep. And I do every so often I'll check in. If I have a book launch, I'll check in on the rank. I'll check in on the income, but I don't know. Like somebody was asking me something the other day, one of my close friends, because, well, people do ask me, I get DMs all the time, how much money are you making? I'm like, why? Who we know
who are you?
And even if we do, why are you asking? But one of my good friends was asking, because we had books doing similarly, and she was like, what's this doing? I was like, I haven't looked in a month. That she was like, what are you doing? And I was like, well, I know what it generally is. And so that's fine. But if I go in and look at the specifics, I start to get stressed. Mm-hmm. And so I really don't spend very much time looking at, I have to go in and kind of get a vague gauge of how things are going. But like, and I think I've had to learn to be a little bit kinder to myself and just sort of understand that it takes what it takes and I need to be okay with that. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, the amount of money I was making, you know, we bought a new house, like we got, you know, which was great because we have five kids and we were packed to the gills, which during COVID like became very clear, you know, and so we bought a house like just a couple minutes away. But then there's that pressure of, well, like we got to make those mortgage payments, mm-hmm. you know, and so kind of having to be kind to myself and also like very, very business minded. Mm-hmm. Like I've had to say no to a lot of things. I stopped doing my podcast, the creative writing podcast. And I actually just now this month, like took the episodes off the podcast apps. They're still on YouTube and on my blog, but that was a sad day. But I didn't have time for that anymore. I had to really streamline the things I did have time for and be a lot more discerning with the decisions I made and the time that I had, I think. But just, I don't think I expected the pressure, but just knowing, you know, because a lot of other people too, probably because of the podcast and the community I kind of had built, they were watching my success. Mm-hmm. And like, I remember there was a time when rank started to be stressful. And then I started getting, again, people in the DMs, man, somebody DMing me like, oh my gosh, look at your rank. And I was like, I'm trying not to watch rank. So thanks for delivering it right into my inbox. Yeah. I have to see it, you know, and it wasn't bad. It's just me, you know, it's a me thing. And so I think I've also realized how neurotic I am about a lot of stuff, but I'm giving myself grace and that's okay. Cause
that's good. I
think, you know, we can't all, you know, have the success the same way and we can't all deal with it the same way. And I can't, you know, I need to not worry about how my neighbor handles their, you know, their success and their rank and their business because it may not look like mine and that's okay. Right. So figuring out what, and this year is a big part of that. Like I told my husband, it's February right now. I said last month, I said, this is going to be the year I have a breakdown. And he was like, so like, what can we do to not have that? I was like, I don't know.
Can we head that off?
And I mean, it's a very logical question. He's like, if you know what's coming, let's stop that from happening. And so that's a very real question as I'm trying to answer is, okay, what can I offload on assistance? What do I need to do? What level of output? Right. Do I need to have to maintain, you know, the things that we have, which, you know, again, we're pretty fiscally nervous people. So it's not like we went crazy and we're like, $1 million house, baby. You know, we bought something that was under what we were allotted, you know, by the bank and stuff and tried to be smart about that. But just trying to gauge what makes sense for me now and knowing it's not going to look like what it did 2 years ago. Right. And maybe next year it'll be different. And I can't, if it takes me 6 months to write a book, it takes me 6 months to write a book. Mm-hmm. And I can't make that happen faster now. Maybe it'll happen faster in the future. Maybe I'll slow down. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. But I think we have to adapt. And as indies, I think we all know that, right? We have to adapt when Amazon changes an algorithm. Mm-hmm. We have to adapt when stupid email changes their DMARC thing and we're all scrambling to hire somebody to fix our back end of our email and all that.
Yeah.
So,
Go ahead.
Oh, are you running any ads or anything?
Yeah, I'm always running ads.
I thought you were, but I wasn't sure and I didn't want to.
Yeah, no, I kind of keep them, you know, and again, I'm bad with ads too. I eyeball a lot of stuff like pop in, looks okay.
Me too. Am I making more than I'm spending? Yes. Okay, I'm good. Yes. I'm out.
And I've gone back and forth hiring people and not, which I think can be great. You know, I have a course that talks about ads, so I always feel bad hiring people, but I'm like, I know how to do it. I just don't have time to do it. And so I am running Amazon ads are more, I feel like just about visibility. Unlike some people, I don't get a lot of ROI. Like when you look at my dashboard, it's like a disaster. But I don't run a lot of those ads. I just kind of keep them so that my books are somewhere being seen. And so I don't expect, but my Facebook ads tend to make a lot of money. So I have, I usually have some ads that are you know, the TikTok or Instagram reel videos with mm-hmm. the music stripped out. Mm-hmm. Those have been really good for me. Recently, I actually went back and had some image ads doing really well, better than the real ads for a little while were, or the video ads, I guess, were the bread and butter. But now my image ads are performing better. So I do run ads kind of at all times, just kind of hopefully undergirding. I found I have a lot more organic sales, which is phenomenal, except for people who are strategists, because I'm like, yeah, but how? And why do they buy? And who are they?
But you're intuitive, I think. Just from listening to you talk, it sounds like you're much more, you can't describe how you know these things, but you do. Right. And absolutely. Obviously you're doing great. So just keep doing whatever you're doing would be the...
Yes, it's just when things change. I mean, like organic sales is absolutely such an amazing thing. And so for a while there, I would not run any ads until I saw how the book did on its own. Mm-hmm. Just to see, like, okay, how many sales will I get? How, in fact, this was a weird accidental experiment. My co-author and I, we had our last book. Jenny Proctor and I wrote three books together, co-writing, which was really fun. We published the last one in January, and we both forgot to send to our email list. And I was like, I didn't send it. Did you send it? And she was like, no. And while I used to say that email, like, and I still say email is hugely important. Social media did not used to sell books, but now it does. Like Instagram. Uh-huh. Absolutely do sell books for me now. They probably didn't when I talked to y'all in 2020, but without our lists, our book still got to the top 100. And I was like, so why am I paying for all these thousands of people on here if I haven't even emailed them and I'm still, you know?
Yeah.
But I do like to see what the books do without things. And I've kind of used the ads, like once it's up there, you can keep it up. But like somebody asked me, how much does it cost to get into the top 100? I thought it was such an interesting question. Because you can get there for free. If your book is, well, if you have a viral TikTok, I've absolutely seen that, or somebody else's TikTok about your book goes viral.
Yeah.
But you can also get there for free if you've built up an organic readership. And I've done that multiple times. And so now if you're going to have to pay for it, like if I want to get a book into the top 100, that's not there, that is expensive. That is hugely expensive. And so a lot of people I think do pay that. And I had somebody ask, they're like, are you spending like $2,000 a day? And I was like, No, not even close.
Yeah.
Way under, like, you know.
Yeah. Well, this is probably, this is probably a good point to ask about how your business model has changed. Like, so as you moved into different genre, how are you like all in KU? Are you wide? How are you doing things?
Yeah. I'm, my backlist, my Sweet Romance, I did go wide, with them, but I don't do a whole lot with them. I was going to use them as kind of a test, even though I know your best, if you're trying to test things with your not best-selling books, you're not going to get the same results. Yeah. But at least like the tech stuff, and I wasn't making enough on them just in KU. My current front list, all my rom-coms are in KU. And, you know, I just don't have the energy for direct sales right now. And I also, I think that the amount of time I see people putting into building a store and running ads and that amount of money that you do have to, I mean, I've talked to people, friends of mine who are spending, you know, who are spending $1,000 a day on their direct store and they might be making a profit. I just don't, that's not how I want to live. Like, you know, we all make choices. Some people are like, well, you're beholden to Amazon. I'm like, okay, but you're beholden to have, often you have to check these Facebook ads and all this stuff and your Shopify and your Klaviyo, like all that is its whole thing too. So, you know, I want to spend more time writing my books. And right now my readers are in KU. Will that change sometime? Maybe, but that, so that at least has kind of stayed the same. I do have some direct audio that I have done. Although I've now, I'm almost everything I've been working with Podium, which is great. You know, they pay in advance and then, you know, we've signed contracts for that. So I don't have to worry about the production. I had a nightmare with my hockey book doing that, but not doing it myself, like recording it myself, but paying narrators. It was a complete nightmare. And lost a whole bunch of money, which hopefully I'll get back as the book sells well, but oof, the audio.
I think I remember that.
I talked to you right when that happened. Yeah. The narrator made too many mistakes and then would not fix them. And I had paid her because I've always paid someone when I get the files and never had that. And so she got the full amount and then I had to hire another narrator to redo it. It's the worst.
Yeah.
So it's been nice to work with Podium. So pretty much my business model in terms of that kind of stuff has stayed, you know, stayed the same. I've just tried to continue to write what I've realized is the most important thing beyond ads for anything else is writing the books that resonate with people. And if you can figure out like, okay, this is resonating and why is it resonating? Mm-hmm. Or just lean into that instinctive part, because I am pretty intuitive and instinctive, mm-hmm. of leaning into that even harder because this is working.
Yeah.
But then being ready for it to change, because, you know, when Amazon made those category changes, my last year's income was below the year before, literally just because of the Amazon category changes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a tiny bit of it was because that one book was delayed, but I think I put up more books and made less money because my visibility was so impacted mm-hmm. by that, you know, and I could see it because I knew when they rolled out the changes like this month, yep, big dip this month, yeah. big, you know, but yeah, pretty much. I just publish. I used to publish like every 2 to 3 months, and now it's just when the books are done. And I'm mm-hmm. working real hard on building my readership and, you know, hooking them into my books. So
yeah, that's great. That's great. How are you doing now? You don't mind me asking.
I don't know that I'll have a great answer for you. You know, I've always loved building communities. Mm-hmm. You know, and don't ask me how many Facebook groups I admin. It's probably over 50. But not that they're all active, but when I went and looked one time, I was real embarrassed. You know, I do try to embrace the things that make me different. I don't want to just be a rom-com author. I want to be Emma St. Clair, the rom-com mm-hmm. author. So when people right. come, you know, they may like rom-com books, but they're coming to me because they want an Emma rom-com mm-hmm. book. And so mm-hmm. kind of leaning into like, what things can people expect in my books? Mm-hmm. And even if I'm writing like, you know, I have some royal books, they're contemporary royals, but, you know, and then I have the small town Texas, very different mm-hmm. kinds of books, but there's a thread of me that goes into them, you know, whether that's right. the kind of humor or the level of, you know, how the kisses are, you know, versus mm-hmm. somebody else's books, mm-hmm. You know, versus little things that I feel like always run through, like our private jokes, you mm-hmm. know, for a while, I may have every book. It wasn't intentional at first, but I think every book has a Mean Girls reference or quote. Sometimes it doesn't say it out loud, you know,
yeah.
like
yeah.
say that's for Mean Girls, but like I'll get emails where like, I saw it, you know, people mm-hmm. look for them. And so putting, I mean, I think it starts with the content, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of content that resonates. And then I've written a lot of bonus scenes to grow email subscribers. In mm-hmm. fact, that's, you know, I think I've written some novellas that are like a really good discovery if nobody's met me, you know, like if they mm-hmm. haven't run into an Emma book, here is a book that's a great gateway into mm-hmm. The Emma world. But if they've read a book, I have these bonus scenes or bonus content. One book I had a bonus scene, but then I also, after that, I mean, it was almost like 100 pages. It was scenes that were deleted. And I explained kind of why, like this yeah. ended up slowing it down, but man, I love this dialogue, you know, mm-hmm. or this one was from his perspective in the book, but I realized when I was editing, it had to be from hers. So here's mm-hmm. his perspective.
Right.
People love that. That was really
They
fun.
Love those scenes.
They
yes.
love that. So it was like mm-hmm. a whole mini book, like a novella yeah. of like stuff I'd cut out. And so, you know, and then I have a Facebook group that's really active. And I feel like just in the past year, it started being where people would host things. Like it wasn't me. They mm-hmm. would come in, you know, and I think sharing what you like with people that's outside of the book world. So for example, yeah. People know I always put animal encounters in my books just because honestly, that's a thing that happens in my real life. Like right, this is a me thing. I know a lot of people put animals in their books, but it legitimately is a actual, my real life thing too.
Right.
But my co-author and I put a raccoon in this one book. I'm not sure what made that raccoon. That book wasn't as big of a seller as the other book in the series, but like, every single day, I have at least 10 to 20 raccoon videos people send me, or they post them in my group. They also know I love yeah. alligators. So if they see an alligator yeah. video, they post those in my group. They'll send me the videos. And so mm-hmm. I think when there's some like levels of connection, and people know I love coffee, so sometimes they'll put coffee, but the animals have been more of a thing. But if you give somebody, like if you give your readers something personal mm-hmm. about you, they start to think of you when they see that. And they're like, thought of mm-hmm. you today. Here's this raccoon video. You know, it's mm-hmm. a raccoon riding on a Roomba. I'm like, this is fantastic. You know, it's brightened my day for sure.
Right, right, so, right.
I think just kind of cultivating the sense of like identity of yourself as an author, like within your genre, right? You have to meet the genre expectations, but then mm-hmm. what are the Emma expectations? What do they yeah. come to for my books? That's not the same as somebody else's books, even in the same space. So that's where right.
I mean, that's your brand. That is Absolutely. Your brand. Yep. And you're branding Emma as opposed to, I mean, you're branding your books too, but you are specifically right. branding Emma, which I've talked about before. And I mean, to me, y'all watch those cooking shows and they take a bite and they're like, is that thyme? You know, they're like kind of tasting it and
they've got their, I've got my fingers in front of my mouth, y'all, kind of going back and forth. And that's how brand is. I mean, it's hard. It's this elusive thing when you're just, you can describe it to somebody, but getting someone to actually recognize it and then getting an author, let's say, to recognize what their brand is and then to lean hard into that is really tricky. And, yeah, you're really lucky if you know that about yourself. And I think
and it is instinctive. I feel very lucky. A lot of the things I am good at are instinctive. Mm-hmm. And so I'm grateful. But then if I try to pick apart why or teach it, some things I can and can't. Like I'm an artist. I almost went to art school and I had terrible instructors. So it's all instinctive. And my kids were like, Mom, you paint so well. Like I have some of my pictures hanging around the house of cows and peppers and skies. Yeah. And they're like, can you teach us? I'm like, nope. Mm-hmm. They're like, why not? I'm like, I can do it. I can't tell you what I mean, I can tell you how to like make gray. Like I can tell you how to do a color wheel, how I can take that and then paint this picture that you see over here. I can't tell you it. I don't know. It's, you know, with the branding and with, you know, kind of building this, you know, group of readers and kind of like leaning into the idea of like fandom type stuff. Like I can do a little more of that. I'm teaching on that at Inkers this year with Angel Lawson. She and I are going to talk about super fans and fandom, which is super fun. But you know, it starts for me instinctively in that way, which I feel lucky to do, but it's also something people can do, but it's harder. You know, I took the Clifton Strengths with Becca Syme this past year. And my number one is strategic, which made a lot of sense as well. For me, I was like, of course, yes, that makes a lot of sense. But, you know, once you know a thing, then you can kind of keep repeating it. But I see a lot of people kind of looking at how somebody else does branding and then trying to do it. Like when I started selling, actually I didn't sell them. When I started making stickers, nobody was really making stickers in my space. And I was actually afraid. I had planned to publish my royal book, my first royal book, right after I finished my first successful rom-com series. And I was scared. Royal was so different than the rom-com. I mean, it was still rom-com, but it was so different than the other rom-com series that people had loved that they weren't going to read it. So I did this whole campaign, go royal with me. And I had stickers. And then I saw how much people loved them. So I'm like a whole sticker addict now. But like, I've seen a lot of people like they try to like, okay, so you just need a sticker. I'm like, no, man, like it doesn't start with the sticker. Like you can make a sticker all you want for your book boyfriend. But if people don't love the book boyfriend, if they don't love the book, they don't care about your book boyfriend sticker. So it's not, it is hard because it's a little nuance. It's not just like, okay, so this is what you're doing. You're buying a sticker. You put an animal in your book. Okay, cool. There's not, it's not like a formula like that, you know?
Right. You have to make people care about those things.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then they want all the raccoon stickers and they want to send you those things, but you can't just, you know, you can't manufacture it. There's a lot more, I think, that goes into it. That's harder work. Than, you know, just slapping a sticker on something or slapping a dog on the cover of a book.
Yeah, it's deeper than that. And that's what makes it hard to explain.
Yeah.
Well, these next questions I'm going to combine because I think they kind of go together. What do you wish you'd known about writing sweet romance rom-com? And how do you write swoony and still keep it closed door?
Great questions. I wish I'd known that I could push out of the box a bit more. Because when I started, my husband was out of work and I was like, okay, I see people making money in this space. I think I could write this kind of book, a sweet romance. And my very first one was, I made mistakes. I didn't really understand romance. I didn't understand tropes. I didn't understand a lot of stuff. Like don't start like the instinctive parts helped, but like I needed to know stuff more. Anyway, that's a mistake, but my first book was really humorous. It was a novella and it was very funny, but it was too much. I think, or I felt like it was, I felt like it didn't fit into that genre. And so I pulled back and I pulled the humor out of my books, which I think was a mistake.
Right.
Then again, I learned a lot of things before I got to writing the rom-com. So I figured out like leading into tropes and stuff like that and what tropes were. I did not know what a trope was. It's like, what does that mean? You know, did not know. And so I really do wish I had not stifled myself creatively in that way, because leaning into what is natural for me, you know, and a lot of people, people write in genre for a reason. Like I said, I started writing clean romance because I saw people making money. My husband's out of work. I needed to make some money, but romantic comedy, I started writing not because I saw a lot of people making money. I didn't. it was because it felt very natural to me. Mm-hmm. And I felt like people laughed at my text messages. They laughed at me in person, well, with me and at me. And then I started getting reviews in my books that were not romantic comedy saying,
right,
I laughed out loud. This was so funny. And I was like, I need to lean into that. But it was, mm-hmm. like I said, risky because I didn't see a lot of authors doing well mm-hmm. at that time. Mm-hmm. There were a couple. Sarah Adams was one who now she yes. has a trad deal, but she was kind of one of the few writing kind of similar to what I wanted to write, you know. And when I had these books started, you know, I started them in 2019. So I had my first royal book kind of a third of the way done, and my first of the love cliches book, like, you know, 10 or 15,000 words done. And I remember running across Sarah Adams' first book and I was like, great, this is so similar to what I want to write. And people are reading it and enjoying it. So there is a space for that where I didn't feel like in the sweet romance, clean romance, whatever we want to call it, that there was enough room for me to do it there. Does that make sense? So yeah. Even though a lot of my readers stayed the same,
right,
but I gained a whole new slew of new readers I just didn't know were out there because I was mm-hmm. kind of afraid. You know, I got stuck too much in the, you know, trappings of a genre that didn't feel whole to me. You know, it didn't feel like me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can't always, people are like, do what you love and people will love it. Yeah, but not always.
Maybe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I feel very, very fortunate that I'm writing stuff I love and people also love it. Like that just yes. feels like the best of both worlds.
Right.
But you know, who knows what would have happened if I started that earlier, but I do wish I had, you know, not sort of stifled that part of me because my books are so much better too. And they feel better to me mm-hmm. because I'm not trying to like put it in a box where I don't.
Yeah. You're not holding back. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very good. And then how do you keep them swoony? Yeah.
You know, for me, I always want people to feel something. Mm-hmm. I was joking with somebody about this the other day. I don't know if you guys have heard this term, but I heard this term and it just made me want to die. Somebody was talking about pants feelings. And yeah. Like, that is like the best. So I want people to have feelings like the swoopy in your belly yeah. where you have that like, oh, happy, mm-hmm. but not so much the pants feelings in the mm-hmm. book.
No throbbing.
We're not going to have things throbbing, but it's funny because I read across the board. And so every so often, you know, like, I'll write a line and I'm like, oh, can't do that one. Like yes. that's too far. And you know, I think that's different for my too. Like, cause I will have, you know, reviews that say this is too steamy. And I'm like, I don't mm-hmm. even mention tongue. Like there's yes. not even a mention of tongue, but I love romance. I love tension. And so yes. I feel like that's something I've worked really hard at that I might have. I think I did write a kiss. That was a whole chapter one time. Mm. And I had, you know, the sexiest chapter or section or scene I may have written was in my hockey book, my Just Don't Fall, where she's never been kissed, which is not what I intended to write. I was like, yeah. So we're going to go to hockey, which is usually very steamy. And then we have this heroine who's never even been kissed. Like
yes.
people are going to hate it, but it worked. It was just who she was. So I just went with it, but she's on this date with him and they're fake dating. And so she doesn't want to kiss him while it's fake, you know? Yeah. And so
yeah.
he tells her how he would kiss her. And that's some of people, they're like, that is like the sexiest thing you've written is he's just, mm-hmm. he's like leaning close and whispering ear what he would do if he was yeah. to kiss her. And so I think there's that, like, you know, those scenes, you know, in movies sometimes, like yeah. I think visually, if I can visualize, I can put it into the book, but like thinking I was a huge Vampire Diaries fan. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If anybody else is out there, the very first time Elena and Damon kiss, there's like this moment where I actually was writing a kiss scene once and I went and watched it, not because mm-hmm. my scene was anything like that, but to see yeah. visually how they set it up. So I was thinking in my mind. So I really do think in a cinematic way during the kisses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, he comes into a room, they're sharing this hotel with her brothers there too. They're looking for somebody and whatever, but they share this look across the room mm-hmm. and there's this zing and oh my gosh, y'all, you have to go find this. It's such a good scene. And then, and then he comes and sits down beside her and like their pinkies touch. And uh-huh. it's like these tiny, tiny moments and then it just builds. And then she has to like run out of the room and then he follows her. Then there's this amazing kiss up against a wall. So like, I think for me, I'm imagining scenes like that, like imagining all the tiny things that lead up to building. And so that's just what I do. And sometimes it is too much for people because I want there to be feelings, not the pants mm-hmm. feelings. But again, mm-hmm. like if that's on you, that's on you. If you have those, like that's, yeah. I can't yeah. really control it, but you know, we have these moments. And I know for myself, I created my own lines. Like what are the things I'm not going to put in my books ever?
Right.
What? What are the words that are not going to go in there? You know, what kind of touching are we going to have? And so right. for me, that, you know, I just have my lines and try to stick to them, but I do try to really infuse the scene with as much build up as I can, mm-hmm. you know, and sometimes there are a lot of slow burns because again, mm-hmm. It's not steamy books. And so there is a lot of right. build up through the whole book, but sometimes I have early kisses too, but I always just try to bring in, to really make each kissing scene count, right. you know, and to try mm-hmm. to make it infused with that tension and also emotional, like an emotional connection. So it's not just physical, because that mm-hmm. also matters a lot to the readers who are coming from yeah. that cleaner side. They want more emotion in the mm-hmm. in the scene. Mm-hmm. And then I just kind of stop. And every so often I'll go farther than I mean to, and then I'll
and then you have to pull it back.
I pull it back. Okay. I send it to my critique partner. Same thing. Some of my guys would cuss, absolutely yeah. cuss, like sailors, some of the girls too. And so I'll just send that scene to Jenny, my critique partner. I'm like, you know that this is really what he'd say here. But yeah. because we're, you know, I still feel like I can stay true to my characters and keep it out. But just at times it's a bit more challenging than others, depending on mm-hmm. how yeah. foul their mouths would be.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, writing athletes in general would be hard, you know.
It is hard. And I write a yeah. lot. I mean, my Sheet Cake Texas book, it's all about family of pro football players. So like, yeah. I have a lot of athletes but I think I can write authentic people that don't use language, but it does mean sometimes there's language in my first drafts that I, you know, cut back later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Sometimes you just have to write it and edit it later and get yeah. rid of the stuff that, you know, your audience isn't going to like, or yeah. change it some way so that it's not exactly. So your readers are happy with it. Yeah.
And right. you can't please everybody, but I know my own lines. You know, and so I'm yeah. like, sometimes I had a reader recently email me and they thought something was too much. And I said, well, it might've been too much for you. And I'm sorry, but it's not too much for me. Like this yeah. is, you know, this is the line I've drawn. And so you can expect that this is the line, but some books may push something more than others because that's the character. It follows mm-hmm. the story. It follows the characters. But I'm not sorry. Like, cause yeah. I have my own lines and that's what I'm going to yeah. go. And I do keep yeah. my audience in mind, but at right. the same yeah. time, ultimately it's my line.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's so important. Yeah. So tell us about your reader event that's coming up. So I think a lot of people will be interested in how all of that works together.
Yeah, I'm really nervous about it. I'll be honest. I'm excited, but I'm really nervous. I haven't heard of a lot of things like what I'm trying to do. Mm-hmm. We don't have the tickets on sale as we speak. It'll be soon. We're recording in February. I don't know when you guys are putting this out, but it's going to be in the fall in October in Texas, and I'm calling it the Sheet Cake Reader Retreat. And so it's a whole weekend event, and I've got, I haven't announced the lineup yet, but I've got, I think, 12 total authors who will be there.
Oh, that's
so
great.
Readers can come. It's at a retreat center. It's actually at a camp called Camp Blessing in Texas. Mm-hmm. That's a special, during the summer, it's a special needs camp, which is mm-hmm. a really amazing camp. My boys have both volunteered there. And so there's like, they have little guest houses. The thing that makes me most nervous is one, it's not super close to an airport. So we're just going to have to see how that goes for people, but also some of the rooms like are shared rooms. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. it's not like a hotel. I did look into hotels, and if I do this again, maybe I'll do that. But like the atmosphere, I was like, okay, so we could have a hotel. One, it would be more expensive. Two, mm-hmm. it's so much more sanitized. Whereas we're going to be yes. at this camp that has this amazing location, you know, that's, they have right. a lake, they have all these beautiful things. We stay there actually. My family at Thanksgiving, my husband's mm-hmm. family's huge. He's one of seven. And we rent out the camp and take the whole family there the Thanksgiving oh, wow. weekend.
Yeah.
And it's just a neat, neat place. So we're going to have, there'll be tickets, a limited number for the whole weekend for people who want to stay and just spend time with authors. You know, we'll have reader kind of events and fun things and free time because we're adults. So we're yeah. not going to like, we'll have some scheduling, but you don't have to show up.
Right.
And then I will sell day tickets too. So if people can't get in because it's, again, limited number, they can come on Saturday and there should be, you know, author signing. We'll do like a little panel Q&A type thing and then a dinner. And I think we're going to have a dance.
No.
come as you want, right?
Yeah.
Come in your pajamas, wear Western wear, wear a formal dress, dress in period costume, like do you. And I think I've got a group, hopefully they'll be coming to come do some fun dancing kind of stuff. So people, if they want to buy just a day ticket, they can come just for the day and have a really fun time. But I'm, you know, it's, I haven't seen a lot of events like this where it's a weekend and right. like you're up close personal with the reader. So I am a little nervous, but I'm super excited.
Yeah.
And this is just part of that same fandom kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm. yeah, exactly.
Let's do something extra. I kind of got the idea after going to see the Savannah Bananas, their world draft. I went to Savannah for that. Mm-hmm. I went to their stadium. I'm a huge fan of theirs, and their owner has this book called Fans First, which is probably the best business book I've ever read, to be honest. And I was reading that book on the plane, and I went out there. Jenny Proctor, my co-author, I've mentioned a million times. She lives in Charleston. So I flew out to visit her because our hockey team, we kind of modeled after that. Like they have the very big TikTok presence and all that kind of stuff, and they have become kind of famous for that as well as hockey. So it tax write-off, right? It's research. So we went down to Savannah, went to the draft and kind of just saw how everything worked. And I was just thinking, like, what does it look like? When I used to joke when I started out, I was like, I'm building my Emma empire, which is really kind of true. But at the same time, I started thinking about like, okay, no, let's build the Emma experience. You know, what does this look like for the fans? What does this look like for my readers? And so I had this idea for this retreat and I was like, this is a little scary because I don't know anybody doing that. Are people going to want to share rooms? Are they going to want to drive to, you know, Texas, the small town in Texas, right? And stay overnight with like authors? I'd like, will this be weird? Will this be amazing? And so it's a little bit of a leap of faith. I'm super excited. It may just be a one-time thing and never again.
Or right.
Maybe an annual. We'll see.
I bet it will be amazing. And there are a couple of authors, mystery authors I know who do events like this and their readers love them. So I bet. And especially for your books, like going to a small rural location is perfect, right? To get that experience.
Yeah, it totally is. I thought about hiring, you know, actors to come play some of the main football players and like carry people's bags. And one of them's grumpy and one of them's like super bright and cheerful.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm going to do that. That might be like, I would maybe actually, next I think year. It's a fun idea, but like, I would be uncomfortable with that. Like things like that make me like very uncomfortable.
Yes. Like, yeah.
I can see that being really funny or having people be like, you know, I'm actually going to go back home. I'm going to get back in the car. Rather than have this like, you know, actor playing James Graham carrying my bag with a scowl on his face. So
that's so funny. I love that. Well, you mentioned it just a little bit earlier, but you've signed a trad contract with Thomas Nelson, correct?
Yep, I did. Yes.
And tell us why you did that. I mean, what led to that? You know, going from being indie, because I know you're pretty, I mean, you're one of the indie people, you know, and kind of pillars in this community. So what made you go to that?
Yeah. So some of it goes back to how I started. I mean, when I started writing and when I had my MFA, I got that in 2007. It was, you know, pre-Kindle, pre-KDP, pre-all that. Yeah. And I always assumed I'd be trad. Because, I mean, that was the only option, right, at that point. And I was also writing different stuff. So I had an agent. We were sending stuff to New York. It was so frustrating, as anyone who's ever done trad knows.
Right.
And I, you know, kept in touch with that agent. We sent some stuff to New York. People loved it, but didn't buy it. And so they're like, just send us the next thing. I was like, sure, while I'm having five kids, let me just write another novel.
Just whip one out.
Yeah. And back then, I mean, my first book took me like 2 years to write one. So, different world altogether out there. But you know, I stayed in touch with that agent and kind of every year or so would check in. Cause once you get your foot in that door, right, you don't want to take the foot out. You want to keep that foot wedged in there real tight. And so I did talk to him a couple of years ago and I was like, you know, I would not mind. I was specifically looking at Motlake because they are in the Amazon world. They have their books in KU. They often price their books similarly to indies, but they put a lot of advertising and push behind their authors. And so I was kind of looking into that. But for me, you know, I kind of talked with him and then I didn't feel like he was the best fit. And so I kind of asked his blessing, like, even though you've talked to me for years and I have brought you no money, like, do I have your blessing to go out into the world? And he said, yes, it was very gracious, which was great. Cause again, you don't want to pull that foot out, right? The trad door, you got to get that foot and just glue it down to the floor in that door. And so I did find another agent who was a better fit. And when we were starting to pitch, I think changed what I was thinking, because while I think there's a lot of benefits and I'm very supportive of Motlake Books, like there's a great benefit to that. Publishing with somebody outside of Amazon's ecosystem is a way to get in front of fans who might not read my books otherwise. Because there are people who will not read indie or don't know it exists because they only buy from bookstores. They only buy books that they see a publisher putting out. And so my main goal is to do this till I die, you know, and I think I will write other kinds of books. I mean, we were joking about that before, about writing a mystery book, but I actually have like some fantasy books I've started writing and things like that. So who knows, but I do want to write forever. And so in order to do that, what do I need? I need fans. I need readers who will stick with me till the end. And so I think going trad is a way to kind of get people in the door. It's to get in front of people who haven't read my books before. And I hope they'll go read my other books. And I hope the people who read these books will go read that. Like, it's a churn, right? Like I want to sell a lot of books for this publisher and make them really happy because my current fans show up. And I also want to find a whole lot of new fans. And so it's just a part of, to me, kind of building that platform, you know, reaching people my ad dollars can't reach, either because they're not willing to look at this kind of book or just literally I can't afford it. Like I can't, you can't pay enough to get certain people to read the book. And I'm really excited. It'll be, you know, a shift because I'm so used to doing everything on my own, but the team there is fantastic. We had just the total nightmare situation the night before we announced the deal, wherein the book I had sold, we realized somebody was publishing a book that literally you could change out the description and it sounded like the same book 3 months later.
Oh
like,
my gosh.
This April, someone's publishing the book that sounds exactly like the book they were going to publish for me next April. You know, how many people are writing a tandem rom-com enemies to lovers book? Well, at least two, it turns out. And so, you know, I realized this at midnight, like literally in the morning we were putting publish on this deal, like putting it up, like we'd already signed the contract, but putting it up on publishers, launcher, marketplace or whatever the thing is. And so, you know, my agent was the only one awake. Everybody else has better sleeping hours. So I messaged her, I texted her at midnight. It was like, someone already wrote my book. Like, I know they'd be different inside, but literally when you have that like two sentence description, they're the same. And she was like, oh my gosh, let's figure this out. So we emailed the publisher and I was like, what if they make me write this book? Cause that's the contract I signed. And I was like, I can't, I don't think creatively I can do it. You know, that just it doesn't work for my brain. Sometime I will, because my book was kind of based on Rob's parents, my husband's parents, and a trip they took on a tandem bike. But that aside, I'm not going to write it right now. So the publisher was fantastic. They came back and were so flexible. And so we, I pitched another book and they were like, that sounds great too.
It's not good.
But, so know, now you've probably sold two books to them.
I mean, again, I might write this one sometime, but I need to figure out how the first book is different, because that is a really specific, you know, because with trad, you're kind of doing a little more high concept. And so this idea of this tandem bike trip is very specific. So if there's already a tandem bike trip book out there, I need to see if that's something I want to write now or next year or 10 years. But I think it's going to be nice. I mean, that's kind of the thing, is having a team behind me where I don't have that now. Having editors behind me, it will be different to have editors I'm not used to looking at my stuff, but I think that's just going to make me better, you know?
Yes, and, absolutely.
I'm really excited about it. And I will stay indie as well. And they know that and are very supportive of that. You know, and they were really great about, like, you know, we love cameos. So like one of the main character in that book is going to be, he's on the hockey team I'm right now. And so it's after he's left. After he's left the team, but my current readers will know him already and the new readers will meet him, but they won't feel jarred. Like, why don't, who is this person? We're not supposed to know him. You know, it's going to be new to them, but if they want to go to his backstory and meet these other hockey guys, they can go do that. So I think it's just overall part of that goal of doing this forever, you know, setting myself up with a foundation that will last a long time.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's fantastic. And it's a way to diversify.
Yes.
Some people are going direct. I'm going trad. There's lots of ways you can reach different people. So this is the way that I've chosen to do that.
That's great.
And then you also had some other interesting, exciting news about your Love Cliché series, right? So tell us about that real quick.
Very exciting.
Well, you know how you get those emails and they're like, hi, we'd love to do this with your book. And you're like, oh, another scam. You know, it's another Nigerian prince who, instead of giving me $1 million, wants to make my book into a movie. I got an email like that a couple years ago. And I think I probably responded something rude, like, yeah, sure, you're a producer, you know? And it actually was a producer and or a guy that works at a production company. There's so many ways that this kind of can happen, because I have some friends who are in this too. But and in short, I optioned the rights to the Love Clichés, and for a year kind of tossed around ideas with this group. And they were, you know, do we want a movie? Do we want to make it a series? What are we going to do? And they weren't sure. And about a year in, I'd been pushing for a series, you know, one, because it lasts longer, makes more money, but also because I think it would be a better, you know, fit for it. But they came to that conclusion on their own. And I was all thumbs up about it. So they, you know, this fall I flew out to Colorado and they spent 2 days filming a pilot. It was kind of a mini pilot. It's not really officially a pilot. They want to this company, they have some contacts at Amazon and Netflix and places, but they also have good contacts at the Angel Network, which a lot of people mm-hmm. know from the show The Chosen, which I think really kind of made them break out. And that right. show, I really appreciate it because it's based on Bible stories, but it's very gritty and mm-hmm. very real in a way that right. a lot of Christian content is not.
Right.
And, you know, because those books, my rom-coms are not Christian. They're just right. clean. And so, mm-hmm. you know, the readership for them is varied, but there's a big fan base of people who don't want content. So Angel is mm-hmm. a great network. So anyway, they filmed this kind of 15 to 20 minute mini pilot, sort of, so to speak. I helped kind of come up with the concept of how to split these five books into something that could be mm-hmm. a multi-season series. I helped write the script. Then they hired script writers because that's not my favorite thing. I'm not real great at that. And, you know, but then they let me like go back in and change some lines, which was great. Cause I was like, I can tell that this was written by men. Like, yeah. this does not sound like a woman.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So helped out with that. And then, you know, got to see them with these actors and actresses and this whole like 50 person production crew. It was amazing. So much fun. And so right now we're just waiting for it to go live. Angel, they're pushing to Angel first, and they have this whole process that you have to do it where you pitch it and whatever. I won't explain it very well, but in any case, mm-hmm. like in the next week or two, it'll be up there for people to kind of watch and vote and for investors mm-hmm. to vote and get behind it. And, you know, wow. I don't know, nothing may come of it because that's how this world works.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, you know, it could be a series that ends up there or somewhere else. And so right. I'm, you know, pretty excited, but trying to keep, you know, a measured level of excitement. So I'm not disappointed. If nothing else, going and seeing, you know, my characters brought to life and having people on the set laughing through these scenes that kind of came from my book and were translated into this, and seeing people be passionate about my stories and putting them into a different medium was just, if nothing else, that was such a highlight.
Yes.
But also it would be really cool if it was
yeah.
right. a series that was on the screen. So, you know, we'll see. Yeah. We'll see.
That's like an author's dream come true, right?
It's absolutely just
amazing. Yes.
Yeah. And it seems like probably all this stuff is happening all at one time, but I'm like, really all this has been, I mean, I was, you know, talking to agents for like a year and a half, you know, right. and this has been right. going on for 2 years, just not publicly, you know, so mm-hmm. overnight success 5 years in, right?
Yes. Down the road. Yeah.
That's how it looks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if you had to start over today, what would you do differently?
Oh man, I think I'd go back to that not stifling myself thing mm-hmm. and kind of leaning into, I'd also read some romance books before writing. That's tip number one. Know your genre, but yes. I think just leaning into what, you know, trusting my instincts, trusting mm-hmm. my gut. And yeah. then, you know, once finding that thing, kind of sticking to it as much as possible,
right.
As much as it balances with, you know, like my ADHD brain and mm-hmm. with overall goals and mental health and whatever other reasons you want to shift into other series, but like, right. yeah, staying on that, staying on the path of the things that work and then not being afraid to trust your gut and to go with the things that you love.
Yeah. That's great. That's a great yeah. answer.
Yeah. That's terrific. Mm-hmm. Well, where can people find out more about you and your books?
Well, I've got emmastclair.com is where all that main Emma kind of stuff is. Although I did redesign my website. Like,
oh, good for you.
Need to get that back in there. And then I'm on Instagram and most social media. Kiki Mojo is my handle. We talked about this before, but I have the pen name, the real name. And my real name is Kirsten, which is hard for people. So I go by Kiki everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I'll answer to all those names, but yeah, Kiki Mojo, I'm most active on Instagram. So
all right. That's perfect. Great. Well, perfect. This has been amazing. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah. It was great to talk to you guys again. It's so fun after, like, I feel like it's like,
I know.
Circle, maybe yes. circle and then a little veering off to a new direction. But,
yep. Yeah. That's all right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. It's great to see the progress and the changes. It's been really fun to talk to you. Yeah. Well, so we will have all those links at the show notes at wishidknownforwriters.com. And if you want to support the podcast, you can go to that same link/support. And just thanks for listening today. Thanks to Alexa Larberg for editing and producing the podcast and to Adriel Wiggins for doing the admin. And we'll see y'all next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast. We hope this episode inspired you, empowered you, and made you laugh a little bit too. If you loved it, tell your friends about it. And if you feel so inclined, leave us a review. We look forward to being with you again next week.